This is Apologetics Profile, a podcast ministry of Watchman Fellowship, equipping the church, exhorting the non-believer, and exalting Christ. Here is your host, Watchman Staff Apologist Daniel Ray.
Some call it deconversion, others might call it a loss of faith, but in social media circles today, walking away from Christianity has taken on the trendy term of deconstruction. It is something of a slippery definition that is at once both easy to identify but more difficult to critique, as advocates of deconstruction will often accuse their critics of not understanding what deconstruction really is. In general, deconstruction, popularly understood, includes a walking away from Christianity, having somewhat of a social media presence that documents the exodus out of the church, and a heuristic confidence that asserts that Christianity is not only wrong, but that it is perfectly acceptable from time to time to mock and deride it. In the end, deconstruction is not finally a quest for finding the truth, but a continual, never-ending process of tearing down one's former Christian life, Christianity itself, and the Bible, and keeping them torn down. Deconstruction, then, is not a process of discovering what is true about God, about the world, and one's place within it. It actually becomes a surrogate and yet often contradictory religious ideology about finding and living in accordance with your authentic self. Though the trend of deconstruction may seem novel, it really is not. As the book of Ecclesiastes tells us, there is finally nothing new under the sun. The late sociologist Philip Reif's diagnosis, for example, of a postmodern culture in his 1966 book, The Triumph of the Therapeutic, Uses of Faith After Freud, sounds as if he were directly addressing the nature of the self in social media today. Reif writes, quote, "The elites of the emergent culture, if they do not destroy themselves and all culture with a dynamism they appear unable to control, are being trained in terminologies that have only the most tenuous relation to any historic or its incorporative self-interpretations. The new religiosity is remissive. It represents no mere literary challenge, as in the time of the Enlightenment. The would-be instinctual everyman and his girlfriend are the enlightened ones now. The individual becomes the expert." End quote. The rise of the autonomous self in relation to unbelief is a theme we will be tracing out in upcoming episodes of The Profile in the coming weeks. One of the catalysts of modern and postmodern unbelief comes from a burgeoning secular understanding of the universe, promulgated by the success of the sciences in describing the cosmos in terms of purely mathematical and mechanical laws. Man could now subjugate and reduce the universe to his control using his newfound analytical prowess. As the law-like nature of the universe unfolded, the heavens became a cold and vacuous realm of abstract calculations, empty space in which God became increasingly marginalized. And with God's cosmic disappearance, man increasingly became the measure of all things. As Dutch philosopher Herman Duyver observed, quote, "The modern autonomous man recreates both his divine origin and his world in his own image." End quote. But again, since the fall of Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden, man asserting himself as God is finally nothing new. The trend of deconstruction is but another recycled variation on an ancient pagan theme. Perhaps you or someone you know or love is passing through a time of doubt and unbelief. Perhaps you have heard them use the term deconstruction. Or even if you have never heard of deconstruction or what it is, these next two episodes of The Profile will be immensely helpful and insightful. We are featuring this week and next two very special guests, apologist and author Tim Barnett of Stand to Reason, and apologist, author, and popular podcaster Alisa Childers. Join us to talk about their new co-authored book, the deconstruction of Christianity, what it is, why it's destructive, and how to respond. It is a book written mostly for families and friends of loved ones who are going through this phenomenon, but it is also a richly insightful and comprehensive overview of the movement as well. The term deconstruction has been borrowed from 20th century philosopher Jacques Derrida's philosophy of the same name. Briefly, as theologian Christopher Watkin notes, Derrida believed that language and, quote, its meanings are open in the sense that we cannot today close down the meaning of any word or sign such that we have exhaustively explored its context and can be utterly confident it can't possibly mean anything but what we think it means, nor can we be sure it will not accrue new primary meanings in the future. There is no way to preserve meanings from the shifting sands of time. Furthermore, context is functionally infinite. The context of an utterance can never be completely exhausted. End quote. In short, Derrida's approach to texts has consequently unleashed a rampant skepticism about how we can know anything at all. This hypertextual hermeneutical suspicion has contributed to many people's skepticism about the Bible. Even though many who doubt the authority and credibility of what is written in the Bible would not know they are, in some sense, waiting within the legacy of Derrida's thought. But one former pastor, David Hayward, also known as the Naked Pastor in social media, directly credits Derrida's philosophy as having begun his exodus out of Christianity. In this short clip, Hayward relates how he applied Derrida's idea of deconstruction to his own deconversion experience.
Hey, everybody. I want to talk about why I started using the word deconstruction. Clear something up for you. Hi, everybody. I'm David Hayward, your Naked Pastor. Yeah, so back in 2008 and 2009, I was invited to participate in a workshop on hermeneutics, you know, how to study the text. And we were required to read some books on deconstruction, a word coined by the French philosopher Jacques Derrida. They intended for us to be turned against deconstruction, but I actually became a convert. I love the word because it described the way my spirituality, I was experiencing it, and that was questioning everything. And so back in 2008, I used the word deconstruction on my blog, and I started using the word deconstruction quite a bit because it just described how my spirituality was going, where I was questioning everything, not just pruning back the tree, but going all the way to the roots and even uprooting the roots. So then I actually started in 2012, after I left the ministry, I started an online community called The Lasting Supper, specifically for people who are deconstructing. That's what the word I used. And then, you know, years later, deconstruction became a thing in the Christian community, the ex-Christian community, the progressive community, etc. And so, you know, I don't care who started it or whatever, but I know I was involved. And I may have been the first one to use it as it applies to progressive Christianity and ex-evangelicals. Love you.
As we began our conversation with Alisa and Tim, I asked both of them what they thought of Hayward's comments. Here is Alisa Childers.
Well, I found it very interesting. I actually, you know, he may be right that if his dates are correct and all of that, I don't know, you know, we don't know who first started using the word deconstruction in this or the hashtag. We can trace the ex-evangelical hashtag back to Blake Chastain, and it certainly is possible. I think that the dates that he's describing are when a lot of this was going on. That's about the time I was in my class that I wrote another gospel about the church that was, I think at that time the pastor may have used the word deconstruction. I can't fully remember, but I think the thing that stands out, like as far as, you know, was he the first to use it or not? I don't know. I don't know if you could even prove that, but or disprove it. But what really stands out to me the most is how he just is admitting that it's connected to the postmodern Derrida, the Derridian sort of paradigm. And he was saying, you know, they wanted us to turn against it, but really that was for me what kind of, in a way, it sounds like what he's saying set him free into this. But what's interesting about that is that if you're going to say that you were influenced by Derrida, you're influenced by the deconstruction of Derrida, which, you know, if anybody who's listening is unfamiliar, for Derrida, it was really had to apply to text and words. So Derrida didn't believe in objective meaning, right? So that words could be pinned down to objective meanings. And so really the intent of the author had no more bearing on the meaning of the words than the interpretation of the hearer. And if that's what he went, oh yeah, that's what I'm doing, then really everything he says after that has to be applied to that paradigm. So when he says, oh, I got out and pulled out the roots and I pulled out the roots, like we could both say the same thing. I could say that I did the same thing. I busted everything down to the studs in my faith crisis and built it back up. However, he has the paradigm of Derrida, the postmodernism, where he can, you know, meaning is fluid. He can question not. And again, Tim and I are not against questioning. We think questioning is good. We think that you should dig down and ask the hard questions. Don't suppress your doubts, engage those things. But we think that Derrida's wrong in his rejection of absolute truth. So you can either, you know, pull out the roots and do all that and rebuild based on truth or based on a postmodern paradigm, which is what he's saying he's doing, which I think aligns perfectly with what we're saying is deconstruction. I think the naked pastor, if you know, everything were equal, should agree with what we've written in our book, because we're basically saying what he's saying, that that is what deconstruction is. It is postmodern. It is sort of built on this rejection of absolute truth when it would come to especially text, but of course it's applied to religion as well. So it all depends on what you think truth is. If you think truth is fluid, if you think you're the truth maker, if you think there is no objective truth to be known, then when you break things down to build them back up, you're going to build them back up based on your preferences. But if you think truth is objective, if it's outside of you, if there's an external source of authority for truth, then you're going to be looking for that. And you may not even like the truth, but you're going to say, okay, I'm going to align with the truth because it's true. So I wish we would have had that quote to use in our book, because that it's essentially what we're saying.
Second edition. There you go. Motivation for a second edition. Tim, some follow-up thoughts on that. Alisa is talking about this concept of truth and postmodernism, and David Hayward there mentioned questioning and tearing down the roots and getting to the bottom core of this. He doesn't seem to be consistent with Derrida in one sense, in that, and I got a clip I'm going to play after this, that they're not rejecting. I mean, it seems like the core of this is just questioning everything without ever arriving at any kind of truth. It seems like what the Bible says, I don't know the verse chapter reference, but always learning, never coming to the truth, in a sense. Some follow-up thoughts on what you heard in that clip.
Yeah, man, I just want to pull my red pen out on this one.
I knew you would want to. Yes.
Well, what's really fascinating is he is totally inconsistent, because he expects us to hear his words and to properly interpret them, right?
Yes.
Would it be fair for me to say, oh, so what you're saying, naked pastor David Hayward, is that you're not the first person to use the word deconstruction? And you say, no, you miss. That's not what I said. I said the exact opposite. And I would say, oh, so you think that I can actually get at your authorial, the author's intent, the original meaning? Mm-hmm. Of course, that's not Derrida. That Derrida says that the reader is the one who brings meaning to the text. Mm. The listener brings meaning to the text. So it's even in the act of presenting the video, he seems to be undermining the entire Derrida philosophy, the postmodern philosophy there. So that would be kind of a starting point.
But I think so does Derrida, though, which is so funny, because he expects you to interpret his words to get what he's meaning
specifically, right?
Yeah,
right. Go ahead, Tim. Go ahead.
No, well, I was just going to say, you know what? Some of these philosophers, they are brilliant men and women out there who espouse a certain kind of philosophy. I'm thinking of like logical positivism. There was a philosophy back in the day that argued that the only things that can be known are through the five senses, are through this. It's a scientism. And it took years for philosophers to kind of figure out, well, wait a second, that philosophy itself is not tested by the five senses. It's not understood through the scientific method. It undermines, it undercuts itself. And so here you have someone like Derrida, and I think that his entire philosophy does undercut itself, because he expects us to understand what he really intended and what he wrote, what he meant. So that's kind of the first thing. But you're right. Here David is going on about how it's just about questioning. And as Elisa just said, Christians are not against questioning. This is something that, you know, we see in scripture over and over again. You see, whether it's prophets or apostles, disciples, asking questions. And oftentimes they're not chastised for it. In fact, when John the Baptist asked the question to Jesus, "Are you the one? Are you the Messiah? Or should we look for another?" Jesus doesn't say, "Don't question. Keep your questions to yourself. You're a bad Christian for asking questions." No, he answers the challenge actually with evidence. "Look at what I'm doing. The blind are seeing, the deaf are hearing, the dead are being raised up," and so on. So we're not against questioning, but what he means, and this is what people would have to do a little bit more digging into David Hayward and Naked Pastor, you know, YouTube account or Instagram or TikTok, whatever. Now I want to make sure people don't Google Naked Pastor. Okay. That would be
not a good thing.
The images that may show up when you do that would not be a good thing.
Have your filter on.
That's right. What he means though, is that you never arrive at the truth, as you just explained. Again, though, he can't live this out. It's another inconsistency, because anyone who follows David Hayward knows he actually has some theological commitments, He puts those commitments out in his drawings that he puts on Instagram and so on. He has a theology. So he says, you don't want to arrive at a new theology. Just keep deconstructing, always in this state of questioning. But the reality is everyone hits a foundation at some point. Everyone has beliefs about the world. He acts like he doesn't, but he does. And he is committed to some of those beliefs. And oftentimes, I mean, we see this in the deconstruction world, where these people have just a fervor for these theological commitments that would rival that, you know, that red-faced pastor who's just like pounding the pulpit. They're just as evangelical, you know, evangelistic, I should say, for their particular theologies and their views.
Yeah. Yeah.
So there's lots of inconsistencies going on here.
Yeah. I'm going to play another clip. And Elisa, we can start with you again after we listen to it. But it brought to mind when I was listening to it this morning. I don't know if you guys know, I'm sure you do, the poet, 19th century American poet, Walt Whitman. He has an epic 52-part poem called Song of Myself. And a lot of people who have interpreted this believe that Whitman is not talking about himself per se, but the universal self. But it opens with this line. It says, "I celebrate myself and sing myself, and what I assume, you shall assume. For every atom belonging to me as good belongs to you. I loaf myself and invite my soul. I lean and loaf at my ease, observing a spear of summer grass." And it is a celebration of the individual and the self over and against the communal, liturgical, theological community of 19th century America. But I think it's getting at this next quote. And I think from what I understand, if I'm representing David's ideas fairly, this is his foundational objective truth. Listen to this. It's pretty remarkable.
"Isn't the goal to find truth? Hi, everybody. I'm David Hayward, your Naked Pastor. Somebody on another platform asked me, isn't the goal to find truth? And I know we get this question a lot because people might think I'm not interested in the truth. I'm trying to erase truth or eradicate it or dismiss it, when it's not true. I believe, like scientists and physicists and all other people who create theories and all, understand that whatever truth they come along is provisional and falsifiable. That means that at any time they need to understand that what they believe is true right now could be proven false. And this has happened all the way through history. Unfortunately, theology and spirituality doesn't think that way. Often, theologians and whatever, when they think they've come up with a truth, believe it's in concrete, it's, you know, chiseled in stone, like the Ten Commandments, and they shut the book and they shut out everybody else who doesn't agree. When I think all claims need to be understood to be provisional, infalsifiable. That means we're open. That means, yes, we're looking for the truth, but we understand that never at any time should we claim that we have found it and everybody else is wrong. That's a lot of what a lot of individuals and institutions do. I think we need to be the opposite. Open, curious, wondering, searching, enjoying, discovering, and exploring. I love you. Bye.
Alicia, I saw you handily jotting down some things there. What do you think?
Well, no, it's a black pen, but...
Oh, okay.
what was the very last thing he said? That's what we should do. It was like an objective truth claim that he is... he just said, never at any time should you claim to have found it. And everything he said is claiming to have found. And it's... But it's like... It's underneath it because he's saying like, this is what we should do. Yes. This is what is good. This is what is virtuous. And he's absolutely just like everything that Tim just said in his last answer. That's what he's doing in that clip that I just heard, because, you know, Tim and I would agree, like claims should be provisional. You know, if you make a truth claim, we talk about, this is what we teach teenagers when we're teaching apologetics. A truth claim is not the same as the truth. You have to test it. You have to test things based on evidence. You have to test them in reality. Where I would disagree with the naked pastor is that never at any time should you claim to have found it. By the way, by saying never at any time should we claim to have found it is him claiming to have found that truth, that you should never claim to find the truth.
Exactly.
It refutes itself. It's very frustrating, actually, to engage with people who have bought into this mindset, because they're refuting themselves. See, I hope we're consistent. I hope Tim and I are consistent. And so when he says truth, you know, they think truth is chiseled in stone. Well, some things we can't know. Like there are some things, but there is an objective truth about it. We just might not be able to know it, right? There's there's mystery in the Bible. There's things God doesn't reveal to us about himself, but that doesn't mean there's not something that is true, but we just don't know it. And so I think that it's just frustrating, the constant, what's the word? Self-refuting
ambiguity,
self-refuting claims that are made. It's kind of like the atheists that say God is immoral because he did X, Y, and Z. And yet if you question, you know, well, what's your standard by which you say something would be moral or immoral? They don't have one. So it's subjective, and yet they are objectively claiming that God is immoral. So it's frustrating because it's not logical. And so Tim, what do you think?
I also think it's a little dishonest because his claim is you can never say that you found the truth. And of course, as Lisa just pointed out, he thinks that's at least one truth that he has discovered, that you can never arrive at the truth. And that it should always be provisional. Well, is that truth claim provisional as well? You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, So you can kind of work that back on itself and show their self-refuting nature. I think there might be a little bit of confusion going on here about what truth actually is. You know, we talked about science for a second, and there's things that are provisional in science, but then there's things that are in science. I mean, as someone who, you know, has a degree in physics, I understand that when we talk about laws, like the second law of thermodynamics, this is not provisional. You know what I'm saying? Like, this is not like, oh, I wonder if someone's going to come along and, you know, refute the law of entropy or something.
Make me younger or something.
That's right. There are certain things. There are theories or hypotheses in science that are provisional. Okay. But as you develop more evidence for a particular hypothesis or theory, it becomes much more established, to the point where you end up having something that we might call a law or a fact, okay, even in science. I think in a similar way, the goal is to arrive at the truth, whether it's through science or whether it's science or religion and or morality. But it appears to me that David Hayward doesn't agree with that statement. It's always going to be provisional. So when Jesus says that he is the way, the truth, and the life. And no one comes to the Father except through him. You can't get to God. You can't get to the Father unless you go through the Son. That is got to be provisional. You know, it's just got to be provisional. And there's no point in your life where you could ever affirm what Jesus is saying there, not with any kind of certainty. And I fully reject that. I think that you can come to a knowledge of the truth. And when you have things like the resurrection, the deity of Christ, when you have this evidence that starts to mount up, and then you have a claim from Jesus in a gospel that you take to be reliable, you can say, man, I can take this to the bank, right? And so it's really important that, I know he wants to use terms like he wants to be open-minded, but if you're so open-minded that you, like your mouth, you can't close it down on something solid, you know, like food, then you're in trouble. And again, at the end of the day, Hayward does close his mind on a whole bunch of stuff. Mm-hmm. And if we pushed him on it, if we pushed on him on love over verses, you know, he's got a meme. It's, you know, what about the verses, Jesus, you know, love over verses. And you're thinking, well, okay, that's your theological point of view. That's your claim. Now let's investigate it. Let's see if it holds up.
Right.
And it turns out, no, it doesn't hold up when we actually put this thing to the test. So I think that there's that. I mean, there's a video I'm going to put out in the next couple of days. It's Michael Gunger. And Michael Gunger is 9 seconds. And Gunger is asked, where can you point us for this truth besides yourself? That's the comment question that he's going to respond to. And in his 9 second response, he says, the only place that you can find truth, capital T, is within yourself.
Oof.
Now, notice what's going on there. The only place you can find truth, capital T. So it seems like when he says capital T, truth, that's like objective truth. But if you're the standard, that's not objective truth. That is subjective truth. And my suspicion is that a lot of these guys will want to talk about truth, but at the end of the day, what they're really talking about is something very subjective, something that involves their personal preferences, their likes. They're the ultimate authority arbiter of what's actually true. And so even though they may talk like, hey, I care about truth, it ends up being something more like, yeah, I care about truth. And guess where I find it? Within myself.
Well, and just to, can I just add a little bit something? I want to add to that, Tim, because that's such a good point. And because a guy like Naked Pastor comes on and starts talking about science and you're like, oh, he believes in truth. And then, you know, because the deconstructionists go nuclear when we talk like this, when we say that it's subjective and they're following their preferences, even though I think it's demonstrable that that's what they're doing when you look at all their tweets and everything. But just take what Naked Pastor just said in that past quote and just apply it to the law of gravity. Right? Does he think that you should not claim to have found truth when it comes to gravity? Well, I don't think he would say that you should stay open and curious about gravity. And that shows, I mean, I could be wrong about that. Maybe he would, but that shows that what Tim's point just was is true, that it's the definition of truth that is different. And so they can bring in things like science and make it sound like they're following objective truth, but they're not applying that to religion. They're not applying objective truth to religion, because I don't think he would say, I don't think so, that he would say, oh, should we stay open and curious, thinking that 2 + 2 = 4? Like, should we not claim to have known, to have found what that is? I don't think he would say you should. And so it just shows that he's not applying that to religion and morality. He's putting religion and morality in the opinion category.
Clip up for you guys so that we can build into this one, which is exactly what we're talking about. And I want you to, this seems to be the final, and you guys have already said it, but I'll let him say it. And again, just to be clear, we're not making David Hayward the ultimate authority on deconstruction, but his thoughts in these short clips do seem to represent a larger percentage of what you see in deconstruction on social media. So given everything you've just said, have a listen to this.
Wouldn't you like to meet yourself? Hi, everybody. I'm David Hayward, your Naked Pastor. I think that's our biggest goal in life, is to finally meet ourselves, to figure out who we are. and to become what we are, who we are, to live our most authentic selves, to be our most authentic selves. That's isn't that your goal? Don't you want that? I know all the risks that come with it, that you might lose family, you might lose friends, you might lose respect, but look, you will find yourself, you will gain yourself. Wouldn't you rather know who you are and live who you are rather than pleasing everybody else around you? I know I would. That's why I painted this painting. I call it, I Will Meet Myself. There's two figures there heading towards each other. And that's what I feel represents me. And I think it represents you, where you will finally meet yourself and be able to live your most authentic self. This is acrylic on canvas, but it's in my watercolor style. I'm really enjoying experimenting with this. And it's available and ready to hang. Check it out at Naked Pastor. But I love you. Your most authentic self needs to be expressed. Nobody else can do it but you. And I just want to encourage you, be your most authentic self.
The big point I want, he said it three times, and I think he says it once more time, to be your authentic self. That seems to be the highest end, but that it's exactly what you guys were just talking about. Elisa, what is the problem with this in a big way? Have you seen this in the research that you've done? Is the self the final arbiter of everything that's going on in deconstruction?
Absolutely. I think that it's a shift of authority from an external authority of truth to an internal one that is found within the self. Overall, just kind of an overarching idea. And to your point about, we're not, you know, picking on the Naked Pastor, but in even according to his own admission, he's very influential in the movement. I mean, his memes pop up absolutely everywhere in every deconstruction space. So I think that he's a good person to engage with on that and his engaging his ideas. So overall, I think that what he has to say is so idealistic. Because it's built upon the assumption that what you find inside of yourself is going to be something that's good. And I think that most people, if you just do a cursory reading of world history, I mean, you don't even have to open your Bible to know that there's something deeply, deeply wrong with human beings. And an interesting point that our friend Clay Jones brought out in his book, Why Does God Allow Evil? He did a lot of research on genocide in that book and talked with genocide researchers and scholars. And Clay said in that book that every genocide researcher to a person will tell you that genocide is not committed generally by sociopaths or people who are, you know, in insane, you know, lunatic asylums. Genocide is committed by normal family people who have dogs and are upstanding members of their community. Genocide is committed by regular people like us. And every genocide researcher will tell you that there's something wrong with human beings. But for you to say that you need to just meet yourself and become your true authentic self is to assume that what you're going to find inside of yourself is something good. And that's where I think the Christian worldview has a much better explanation for what's going on with people. And that's that you're going to look inside yourself and find a broken sinner. But the good news, and this is why we say the gospel is good news, because there is a cure. But it's almost like if you just applied like what he said to like a cancer patient or something, and you said, you just need to become a person with cancer. You need to just live that out and just become your most authentic cancer person. Well, that person's going to die because you're withholding the cure for what's actually wrong with them. And so it's a denial of the idea that humans are inherently sinful. And frankly, I mean, if you really wanted to take this to the extreme, you could say, well, what about the sociopath or the pedophile? Would your advice change at all? If you had a...
He's just being true to himself or herself.
That's what they're doing. And then he, you know, I don't know what he would say. He might say, well, that's this because they're harming other people. But all sin harms other people. There's very few things that just only harm yourself or affect yourself.
Right.
So, you know, would you say that to the sociopath? Would you say you just need to become your most authentic self and meet yourself? And then what really brings that sociopath joy is serial killing. Is that... I mean, you know, it's just an extreme example, but even on the smaller level, I wouldn't want to become my true authentic self. And this is the last thing I'll say, and I'll throw it over to Tim, but I was doing an interview once and the host of the interview said, "Lord, save me from my true authentic self." And I thought that was a great line.
Well, thank you guys. Briefly, either one of you or both of you, best way to find out about the book?
Well, it's available at basically wherever books are sold. But if people were to pre-order before January 30th, they could take their receipt number, go to the website, The Deconstruction of Christianity. That actually is going to take you over to the Elisa Childers website. It's going to be a page there where you put in some of your information, your email, that receipt number, and then you get some freebies. Okay. So if there's a couple days there where, you know, this goes out and the book has not come out yet, you can get the audiobook for 30 days for free. 30 days or 60 days? Awesome. Is it 60?
I think it's 60. Okay. I think it's 60.
Well, you won't need 60. You'll listen to it probably in a couple of days. You'll get through it. There's also a free chapter. Actually, the advice chapter, we think it's one of the best chapters in the book, certainly the most practical. You'll get that chapter emailed directly to you as a PDF. So
great.
So people, you know, they could get the book at Amazon or any other places. It's all good. And just so people know, there's also a study guide coming out along with a 6-session video recorded curriculum that people can use in their churches. We loved filming this. We were in this beautiful church in Nashville. We think that's going to be really helpful. That comes out, I think, early March.
Excellent. Excellent. Anything you'd like to add promo-wise, Elisa? Most everybody knows about you and your podcast, at least in our audience. I know that.
The Elisa Childers podcast. Also check out Red Pen Logic on TikTok, Instagram, and YouTube. That's Tim's channel. He does amazing short videos responding to a lot of the deconstructionists. So yeah, that's where you can find us.
Apologetics Profile is a production of Watchman Fellowship, Incorporated, Arlington, Texas. For more information on apologetics, cults, world religions, and other non-Christian ideologies and practices, visit watchman.org today. That's watchman.org.